Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. 1925, yesterday, Malcolm X was born. Malcolm Little was born. And we people always argue and debate and discuss Malcolm X, what he means, what he meant, huge controversies between different books that were written about him. But what we want to focus on today is what does Malcolm X mean for the 21st century in terms of what he stood for in the 1960s? We are joined here by an interesting panel of guests. I want you all to join us here at 410-319-8888 because everyone always calls out Malcolm X's name. And everybody calls his name out like they do Martin Luther King's name and any other kind of leader we know that has left us for their own reasons and to support their own political ideas. And what are we missing? What are we not missing? What should we be talking about? We are joined here by Dr. Jared Ball. Dr. Jared Ball, of course, Associate Professor in the Department of Communication Studies here at Morgan State University, author of I Mix What I Like, A Mixtape Manifesto, and co-editor of A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manny Marable's Malcolm X. That debate needs to take place here on the show since we've done both. Frederick Harris directs the Institute for Research in African American Studies and the Center for African American Politics and Society at Columbia University. And Dr. Frederick Harris wrote the book, The Price of the Ticket, Barack Obama and the Rise and Decline of Black Politics. And also joining us is Kevin Alexander Gray, author of The Decline of Black Politics from Malcolm X to Barack Obama and Waiting for Lightning to Strike, The Fundamentals of Black Politics, organizer for the Harriet Tubman Freedom House Project. In a few moments, joining us here in studio will be Paul Coates, former leader of the Black Panther Party here in Baltimore, founder of the Black Classic Press, and publisher of A Life in Reinvention, Correcting Manny Marable's Malcolm X. Kevin, Frederick, Jared, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Good morning.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner or jump on our Facebook pages and throw your comments up there. We will get to those as well. So let me just begin in a broader sense of how all three of you reflect on Malcolm X then and now. Frederick Harris, let me start with you.
Well, of course, Malcolm X is an extraordinary figure, and we can't forget that one of his most profound speeches in 1963, which is 50 years ago, was a message to the grassroots. He talked about what a black revolution was all about, and he really countered the hegemonic views of the nonviolent civil rights movement that Dr. King led. And so when we look back at Malcolm X today, I think we should be looking back at what happened 50 years ago. Because not only was Malcolm who gave that speech in the fall of 1963, there were also two important words that were very profound during that year by other leaders. Of course, King's letter to a Birmingham jail, as well as James Baldwin's very important and profound Fire Next Time, which was also published that year. And in fact, Baldwin was between these two figures. And perhaps as we reflect on Malcolm X, we should also reflect on those other two thinkers and activists.
Well, we will. I'm going to bring that back up. I appreciate that. Kevin Alexander Gray?
The sound's down, so I can... It's hard to hear the other callers. But first, let me say, express my condolences and love for Kabila Shabazz on the loss of her son, Malcolm.
Right.
It's a sad time for the family that's gone through a lot of struggles. And the young brother was certainly on his way to making an impact and a contribution to the movement. So our hearts go out to the family. I think the main, for me, one of the main legacies that Malcolm left for African Americans here on the continent is the institutionalization of the black struggle in the U.S. and the need for us to continue the work that Malcolm started to make our struggle for reparations, our struggle for restitution, our struggle to lay the economic claims to building this nation and not being treated as first-class citizens in a nation. I think that is the enduring legacy of Brother Malcolm. The idea also that when we look at today's politics and how to critique today's politics, I wrote a piece a couple of maybe about 4 or 5 years ago when the president was elected called the Novocaine Effect, and I talked about Malcolm talking about the, going to the dentist and sticking that needle in your jaw and for that Novocaine. And so he certainly was prescient as it relates to the Novocaine Effect that black Americans are under the influence of now with this particular president, and not making a critique of empire, and the idea that one, either you want to run the empire or you want to change the empire. Malcolm was one of the ones that wanted to change the nature of the American empire and realized how corrupt it was all around the world. So, you know, just for those two things, the institutionalization of the black struggle, the idea that not that I think that just taking it to the UN, taking the aftermath of Jim Crow and institutional racism and the legacy of slavery, et cetera, to the United Nations, but there still needs to be an institutionalization of our struggle where we connect up to people's struggles all around the world. And that, to me, is perhaps the most important dimension of Malcolm's legacy.
Jared.
Yes, good morning. First, I do need to say I was not really able to hear either of the other responses, so I hope none of this is too repetitive. What I did hear from Kevin Alexander, Gray's comments, I would want to echo that the condolences to the family that continues to suffer not only the physical loss of loved ones, but what I'm seeing happen again, the repeated distortion in the press of the life, work, and history of this family and the people in it, obviously, as was the case with Malcolm Shabazz. And also the point of internationalizing the politics surrounding the black struggle, all of which I think, which Malcolm, not only was he one of the finest spokespersons and representatives of a variety of radical traditions, but he was among the best at connecting them internationally. And this is something that is extremely important because as we look at the condition of black America today and see how much of the things, if not all of the things that Malcolm was trying to organize us to struggle against are have retrenched and in some cases worsened. But our status, the collective status of African people in this country around the world has been diminished by our apparent complicity with Western Empire over the last 40 years, at least as it's been depicted in popular press and certainly with popular electoral politics most recently. So it's always good to remember to reflect on Malcolm whenever possible. In our household, we try to do it daily, just to be reminded of what real political struggle is, what the real issues are, what organization really requires, what commitment requires, and the threats and struggles that come along with them.
We have to take a very brief break. We'll be joined then by Paul Coates as well and get this phone thing straightened out so everybody can hear everybody as we reflect on Malcolm X. 410-319-8888. Join us. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are exploring Malcolm X's life. And before we get back to this conversation about his life, because yesterday was the anniversary of his birth, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We are now joined by Dr. Jared Ball, Associate Professor in the Department of Communication Studies here at Morgan State University, author of the book I Mix What I Like, A Mixtape Manifesto, co-editor of A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manny Marable's Malcolm X. Dr. Frederick Harris directs the Institute for Research in African American Studies and the Center for African American Politics and Society at Columbia University, author of The Price of the Ticket, Barack Obama and the Rise and Decline of Black Politics in America, and Kevin Alexander Gray, who is author of The Decline in Black Politics from Malcolm X to Barack Obama, and Waiting for Lightning to Strike, The Fundamentals of Black Politics, organizer for the Harriet Tubman Freedom Project, Freedom House Project, and coming in just a second is Paul Coates, a former leader of the Black Panther Party, founder of Black Classic Press, who published Live Reinvention. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us here for this conversation. So let's just pick out where we left off, and before we get to our callers at 410-319-8888. What we were talking about here earlier, let me just get my – here we go, with Frederick Harris and what Jared was saying. This is – I mean, our wrestling over the meaning of Malcolm X. I mean, this is what I was talking about earlier. In terms of how his legacy is used, what he really represented, we hear it used by establishment politicians in the Democratic Party. We hear it used by people who, for want of a better term, would have politics that are nationalist. People argue whether was Malcolm a nationalist or not. How do nationalists interpret that? People use them when they're trying to create interracial movements in America. But everybody has their own Malcolm. How do we get at what this all means and what the truth is? Kevin? I mean, Frederick?
Well, you know Frederick? What? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frederick.
Frederick, and then Kevin. I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah, that's an interesting question, and I don't think it's necessarily unique to Malcolm X. We see the same phenomena when we think of a person like Rosa Parks, for instance, and how her legacy is in many ways turned around. What happens, and it's interesting in the case of Malcolm X, is what happens to black leaders when their legacies are mainstreamed and they ascend to some sort of national statehood, or a sainthood, rather. And even in the case of Malcolm, who to my surprise, was commemorated on a U.S. American stamp, as in many ways, his legacy has been diminished and by, in some ways, the mainstreaming of what people think Malcolm stood for at a particular time and at a particular position. And so, although this is quite confusing, as you say, the Democratic Party, some embrace him as a nationalist, some embrace him as a socialist. It's really interesting that as time passes, it becomes very difficult for those who really know the legacies of freedom fighters like Malcolm X to really make sure that his legacy and what he really truly believed in stays alive.
I'm sorry, you can jump in, Frederick. So you were trying to a minute ago. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You didn't hear me.
No, go ahead.
I'm finished with the.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We did hear you. I'm just getting confused by how these phones are working. My fault, not yours. I meant to go to Kevin. Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, the good thing about Malcolm, Brother Malcolm and Brother Martin, is that those brothers wrote and they spoke.
Yes.
And so for me, regardless of how folk will try to use or misuse their image, because that's basically what they're misusing, they're using Malcolm's image as the image of the militant, or King's image as the image of the nonviolent pacifist. But, Malcolm was pretty clear. And when you look at American politics and how it's playing out today, especially with a president who happens to be a person of color, who claims that he is a devotee of Malcolm. Well, as I said, Malcolm wrote. Look at the speech, The House Negro versus the Field Negro. And it's very clear, the House Negro lived in the house with master. So now not the House Negro is playing the master. And so you can't really create any kind of subterfuges to hide what the meaning of the House Negro and the Field Negro means in American politics and who occupies those places. You might not want, as Malcolm said, you might not want to accept it, but it is what it is right now. Because, as I said, Malcolm's critique was always running the empire or changing the empire and challenging the empire. And that's where we are now in American politics. So, the critique is still the same. America is still the greatest purveyor of violence around the world. Regardless of what color you cloak power in, power still seeks more power. If you look at the idea of who pacifies the restless the most efficiently, obviously, if your oppressor looks like you, you might swallow that poison a little bit easier. And so, for me, Malcolm has been solace in the last 5 years, looking at just the demise of progressive black politics and this idea that we have to support even the most ridiculous things from the American government, that all of a sudden we're listening to someone tell us that we should be loyal to an empire that routinely murders people of color, that routinely suppresses and oppresses people of color, that is predicated on the idea of genocide and white supremacy. Malcolm offers the critique opposing that, and regardless of how many so-called mainstream or in-the-mix figures gravitate to Malcolm, well, you know, the fact that he is where he's at with the ancestors, and they're still walking around in the seats of power pretending that they have some kind of franchise to be almost white, Malcolm's critique stands firm.
Well, again, so let me get you all back into this, and I'd like to hear that from first. Let me go to Paul. Welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Hey, Mark. Thank you. Glad to be here.
I understand you went to the other communications buildings. This is a new studio that nobody. That's
old
good.
School,
old school.
Mark.
Old school. You but welcome.
Y'all aren't turning knobs up there, are you?
Almost.
So no, not anymore. But Paul, your thoughts. I mean, then I do. Before we go back to Jared, want to go back to Frederick for a response to that too, because what we just heard. I mean, the question of that the analysis is the analysis the same that as it was in '65 when Malcolm was murdered? Are we in subtly or overtly a different place?
I don't know. I don't think it's the same. At the same time, there are factors that. Certainly oppose black people, oppose the will of people to be free around the world. But I don't think it's the same. And I think that's one of the great things about Malcolm. I think that Malcolm's legacy is useful for critiquing the space and the place that we're in now. But it has to be a critique that's based on the struggles of Malcolm, the struggles of those who came before, giving us that a continued vision of how we struggle against the forces that oppose us now. But if you ask me, is it the same? Of course not. I mean, Bull Connor is not there. George Wallace is not standing in the doorway. We have Barack Obama, who many people love, but who has taken the place of one of the forces that we have to oppose. And the only way we can do that, I think, is with a little more sophistication than what Malcolm confronted at the time. It's a little more sophisticated than labeling people like Barack Obama simply as House Negroes, as Malcolm was able to do in his time. At the same time, again, I want to emphasize, I think that Malcolm's analysis of the world, his leadership, and the direction he pointed in gives us the basis to look at where we are now and consequently build a model for critiquing and moving against those forces that oppress us.
So let me go here to Jared, then back to Kevin to address the question of complexity then and now. Jared and then Kevin.
Well, I mean, certainly things change, but it's just as those who defend it would talk about, you know, they would use phrases like advanced capitalism or late stage capitalism. They wouldn't suggest that capitalism itself or in its fundamental principles should be abandoned. And I would suggest the same thing be applied to people like Malcolm X or otherwise, that as Kevin just said, and I agree mostly with what he says almost all the time anyway, but I would just extend the agreement here that Malcolm was not confusing. Malcolm was very clear in his position relative to empire, relative to white supremacy, to capitalism, and so on. The only thing that could be called confusing, if even that, is how people interpret what Malcolm's clear record is. So we even, you know, we continue to advocate that people just return to it and listen to him. He's on YouTube all over the place, read his works, read his texts, read as much as you can about what he has said, and then reach your own conclusions. But he has been very clear. The problem is the very political interpretations people would bring to bear. So, and this happens all the time. I mean, the United States and West, the West in general, often make more complicated things and that are happening than they really are. I mean, this is why. I mean, he was in some ways joking, but I think extending the comedy of a Malcolm X, Kwame Ture was right in saying, if you want to end poverty, just give poor people money. And it in some ways breaks down some of the false complexity around issues of distribution of goods and services and the way people are treated. So I think if we just apply the principle, the foundational principles that Malcolm X was very clear about to today, whatever adjustments are necessary can be made, but all within the proper context and just in the right trajectory.
Kevin, jump in, please.
I've run campaigns. And, I've managed Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign as quiet as it kept. I don't tell people that I was involved in Sharpton's campaign, but I was for a minute. And I'm just glad that whatever files that the government has on me during that period of time, you know, I hope I didn't say anything that's going to get me locked up. But, I guess we could say it's complex when you use racial solidarity to advance white supremacy. It's kind of complex for people to unravel those two notions. The idea that we use racial solidarity now to advance, let's say, the wars, the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on the economic well-being of black people. If you believe in a desegregated public school system and not a Wall Street school system like Arne Duncan and President Obama are advancing, if you believe in resegregation, then, you know, the way that Arne Duncan and Obama paint it and sell it is complex. Most people aren't realizing that the striking workers in Chicago are striking against what the president is basically supporting. That's the complexity of it. But as I said earlier, Malcolm's stuff, what he's written, is pretty cut and dry, so you can make the critique. That is not complex, that black people, not just Barack Obama, but black people operate under a system of white supremacy. They operate the system of white supremacy. They can be racist when they are operating under a system of white supremacy. So it does get down to whether or not a progressive black movement constantly opposes the status quo of Wall Street globalism and capitalism and seeks to for a broader redistribution of wealth. Those are complex issues, but the fact remains that the country and the economic structure was built on the backs of enslaved Africans and built on discrimination and given advantage to white people, the extension of white privilege, and now what we have is we have technocrats, we have black folk who are elected, and they believe that they have to be more efficient in running that system than their white counterparts, and that's the problem.
Just in the interest of time, I just want to get Frederick jump in here before we go to the phones. Frederick?
Yes, I want to chime in about the importance of increasing complexity and the need to be more politically sophisticated. And I think that is an important message with the idea that I think black political struggle needs to do what someone mentioned earlier about the idea of connecting black political struggle to what's happening internationally. And one of the most important policy issues that we should be thinking about in those terms is mass incarceration. Mm-hmm. And so when we hear things about the abuse of prisoners by the U.S. in the Middle East or discussions about Guantanamo, I don't think black leaders or black progressive leaders are doing enough to link what's happening to black and brown people here in prisoners to what's happening in Guantanamo and in other situations. And not only did Malcolm do this in a sense of, you know, linking black struggle to the struggle of people of color around the world, but also there were a generation of activists who came before him, particularly during the early years of the Cold War, people like Du Bois, Paul Robeson, who saw that importance. And I think we're drifting away from that, mostly because, as already been seen, there's a person of said that there's a person of African descent who's heading the American empire. And so that's a concern. But I think one of the biggest obstacles in that, in doing that, as long as others, a much more broader black progressive movement, is that in the first time in American history, we've had more people, black people, who are part of the what's considered to be the American middle class, who have entered mainstream American institutions in the field of entertainment, in the field of academe, in the field of business, and in politics, who are there pretty much to steer, to adopt, or to participate in the same policies that have been ongoing for a while. So the black middle class is clearly invested in maintaining the system as it is, at least the black part of the black middle class who are pretty much integrated or assimilated within mainstream American institutions.
So let me open the floor. You said something. I want to get this call. It's been waiting a long time. I'll come right back to your thought before we end the hour. I think the juxtaposition of these points is really important for us to wrestle with. 410-319-8888. Reverend Washington, you're on the air.
Yes. I would like to know whoever's on the panel. And the reason is because my father was blessed to be with the brother minister the last 2 years of his life. And I know other people are around, and that was there. Matter of fact, they went from the Muslim Mosque Incorporated to the Organization for the Brotherhood. They renamed that group, and my father was one of the first members. And my father was the late Donald Hassan Washington from Harlem. And I have a unique perspective because Malcolm was getting ready to join the Civil Rights Organization and also every black organization to help them spring themselves into the 21st century. So much to Manny Mabo, if I may say, he did more damage in that book than good, because he equated Malcolm with some kind of homosexual tendencies, and he really didn't have a chance to explain that Malcolm was far away from that as possible. And so I'm saying that uncategorically that the assassination that his young grandson that went through in Mexico was no accident, because he had also turned his life around and began to do the work that his grandfather did in terms of uniting people in of all races and all persuasions, the one who wanted to pull themselves up, and he was going to find a way to do that. And so when the accounts that he was arriving in Mexico...
Okay, well, I'm sure we're almost out of time, Reverend, but I don't want you to hang up yet, because I do want to get your telephone number and give you a call to talk more about what you're saying.
Thank you, but
don't hang up, because Bobby will pick up.
All right.
Paul, would you comment first?
Going back to the...
And maybe juxtaposed to what you just heard.
Yeah, I don't want to comment so much on Reverend Washington's point. But I do think this is a very interesting discussion. And I don't think there's a lot... It may sound like there's some disagreement, but I don't think there's a lot of disagreement.
Right.
At all. I think there's a general appreciation for general and specific appreciation for Malcolm's forward thinking and enduring thought. And I certainly would hold to that. I do think, though, as someone previously pointed out and as I was trying to indicate, it's different than in 1965, 1968, when we could stand and point to the avaricious businessmen as a class of white folks who were all done and apart from ourselves. So many of what we call middle-class blacks, for whatever reason, have ingrained themselves, and their loyalty lies with the class of Obama. You know, I find this in my family, and it's ingrained in our community. So pointing out the contradictions, where the issues lie with Obama's policies across the line, drawing those policies domestically, drawing those policies internationally, and pointing those things out, I think it does take thought. I think it does take I think it takes considered action to do that and draw a line of delineation in which people can be enfolded into whatever this vision is for this coherent vision is for the future. And I think we also have to look at Malcolm. Where would Malcolm be? I mean, his thought was constantly evolving and constantly enfolding people, and I think that's the path that we have to place ourselves into. So I don't want to make complex complex.
No, no, right, right,
but
right,
but
right.
I think life is complex. You know what I mean? I think these are the challenges of life, and so it's not bad.
We literally have a couple of minutes left before we have to break, and we want to come back to this conversation in greater depth. Maybe a really quick thoughts from all of our guests, Kevin and then Frederick. To kind of help close out with Jared, we literally have 2 minutes left.
Yeah, and I agree with everything that the previous guest just said. I think we're more in agreement than in disagreement. I think the Organization of African Unity is still a good idea. And of course, you know, we talk about the war on terror, but there is the war on drugs in this country. Whenever anybody mentions the war on terror, I say, well, look who's in jail in America. And that ought to explain who we ought to be connecting up with as far as talking about the struggle against people of color all around the world.
And go ahead. I'm sorry, Kevin. I mean, Frederick.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, yes. Kevin, yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
I'm done.
I'm sorry, man. Just Kevin, go ahead.
Frederick, is that you?
Frederick, you go ahead. This is Kevin.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's my fault, y'all. I apologize.
Yes, who's on first?
Well, 30 seconds, because I'm just being told about to wrap up. It's time for Michelle Martin.
Okay, pointing out the contradictions, I think that's very important. And one of the things that personally burned me in this age of Obama is how many black people are talking about the need for racial neutrality in public policy and political discourse. And I'm sure, I mean, we know that Malcolm was constantly changing or evolving, but I could not imagine that Malcolm X would endorse some sort of perspective that this country and the politics of this country and the way that we think about public policy doesn't involve a discussion about the persistence of racial inequality.
What I'd like to do is invite all of you back for a longer discussion to really talk about the complexities of 21st century capitalism and where we are with this message and where we should go. Paul Coates, always good to see you.
Same, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Founder of Black Classic Press, Kevin Alexander Gray, and Frederick Harris. Sorry to keep getting you two mixed up during the course of the conversation. And my good friend, Dr. Jared Ball, will have connections to all four of our guests and their work online at steinershow.org. And right now we're going to take a break. And when we take a break, we're not coming back, but Michelle Martin will be here with Tell Me More. And I'm Mark Steiner for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away.